Hello, I'm Charles Mannett, and this is a UK Column interview for which there will be notes and links posted at ukcolumn.org. I have with me Jason Christoph, who is a mind control expert in terms of his knowledge and in particular behaviour modification and indeed how to combat the idea or indeed the issue of self-sabotage. Jason, you're very welcome to UK Column. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. And what I would like to do is to set the scene, and by way of getting into your background and how it is you came to be doing what you're doing, please start with a description of what exactly it is that you mean by mind control and how your personal journey has brought you to the place you are now in.
Well, Charles, I used to be a high-end exercise and nutrition coach, and I would charge a lot of money. I would find a lot of people I was training were very intimidated and would turn away from their goals when we got close. So I would get paid thousands of dollars and say someone needed to lose 30 pounds. They'd lose 10 and they'd scurry away like they were afraid to accomplish their goal. So I phoned my school back and I said, something's wrong here. I'm not getting the results that I'm looking for. They said, well, these people are under various forms of mind control. And I said, well, and which makes them afraid to accomplish their goals. And I said, well, why did you teach me that when I was at the school? They said, you just missed a couple extra levels, but we can send you some extra books. So they sent me some extra reading material on mind control, and I started using it on my clients. It was the only thing that worked, and it worked so well, I put myself out of business. So I started doing it online and getting some great results. I got so busy that I had to open sort of an international overcoming self-sabotage psychological manipulation school to teach medical doctors, chiropractors, other coaches, and even members of the general public how to use this to improve the lives of their patients. So I've been doing this research now for about 15 years, and I've been getting asked. I do about 250 interviews a year now. I just spoke at the U.S. Senate on mind control and brainwashing. I spoke at the Romanian Palace of the Parliament in November on the same topics, and I also spoke at the EU Parliament. It's a very hot topic now, Charles, as you know, simply because so much psychological manipulation, brainwashing, propaganda, and mind control is being hurled at the public during the COVID operation. So it's become a very hot topic, and I sort of make it a complex issue, very easy to understand for the general public.
Excellent introduction. Thank you very much for that, Jason. Now, let's go a bit further into what is meant by mind control, where it comes from, the history of it, and who is conducting it, how and why.
Those are a lot of questions, but basically the human system, we all have the system as standard equipment on the human body. We do have this operation called the subconscious. Now, this is where mind control begins. What happens is that the subconscious is there to protect us, is there to make us safe, it's there to make us secure. And it looks out through our eyes, listens through our ears, and it's really obsessed with repetitive content, Charles. And it's obsessed with repetitive content because it assumes that the repetitive content of your environment reflects what the bigger herd is saying, thinking, or doing. And if you mimic or mirror, emulate, and copy that, you're safer. So this process goes on all the time where this invisible, unconscious assessment system is looking out into the environment, looking for the most repetitive content, and then forcing you to act it out outside your conscious awareness. There aren't invisible systems in your body that protect you, like a cut healing. You are not involved. You can't get involved with the cut healing. You can't accelerate it. You can't slow it down. You're not in control. This is another invisible system. It runs in the background. It's going on 24 hours a day. You're not aware of it. So basically, the repetitive content of our environment is what dictates our behavior. 93 to 97% of our behavior during the day is based on these repetitive programs that run in the background, and the average person knows really nothing about them, not because they're ignorant, because they're not taught about them. Now, many thousands of years ago, they started to notice that the environment really dictated the behavior of the human being, and they started sort of manipulating, experimenting with this. And this all sort of all this knowledge that I'm talking about accumulated in this country. Now, this might sound odd, but anybody can Google this themselves, is that there was a country by the name of Media. If people can believe it, this is where we get our word media from today. So it's about a 2,000-year-old country. It used to occupy the same land as Iran or Azerbaijan today. And this group started to accumulate this knowledge and then also teach it to leaders, kings, and queens of the Mediterranean, showing them various modalities and controlling the repetitive content of what someone sees and hears isn't the only way you can mind control or, hijack what's called the subconscious mind pathway. There's various other modalities. So they package this almost like it's a university course, started bringing in kings and queens from the Mediterranean and teaching them the fine art of mind control, behavior modification, psychological manipulation. And this is where we get the various secret societies today. The secrets that these societies hold close to their chest today has a lot to do with these modalities of psychological manipulation. And again, when you control the environment and people act out the repetitive cueing that you purposely put in the environment, the victim would not know that you're doing it, and they would believe their behavior was sort of internal or organic to them. I'll give you an example, Charles, of how effective this can be. And it doesn't apply to everybody, but in 2001, there was a movie called Gone in 60 Seconds with Angelina Jolie and Nicolas Cage. And it was a movie about car theft. And this part of the brain that it loves us, assesses our environment, looks for repetitive content, tries to love us to safety and security in the way it does. It's been shown that it doesn't know the difference between real time, imagined thought, and what's on the screen. So if you're in the cinema, you're sitting in the cinema, you're watching Gone in 60 Seconds with Angelina Jolie and Nicolas Cage, a movie about car theft. This part of the brain doesn't know that it's on the screen. It thinks you're literally in the environment where car theft is very prolific, it's very frequent, and it's very repetitive. This part of the brain would literally be going through the steps it always goes through. What tribe am I in? How do I find safety with the tribe? What do I have to do to bond with the tribe? How do I flash the gang colors of this tribe so I find safety with the tribe? This movie had 100 car thefts throughout it. It was a very typical Hollywood film, a lot of action, but it was all based on car theft. And when that movie was released in British Burnaby, British Columbia, in Canada, car theft went up 70% in the first 4 days. Now, if you were to interview anybody outside inside the lobby of the theater and say or ask them a question, do you think a movie, what a person's watching, what they're hearing, do you think it can change the behavior of the audience? They would say, absolutely not. But this is the exact position that the ruling group wants the public in. They basically want them in that position where they believe that their behavior is organic and internal to themselves, and all their life decisions is based on like logical and rational analysis of all their outcomes. Nothing could be further from the truth. The group ruling us have a saying that I came across in my research: what's on the screen at noon will be on the street at night. And wherever we want the public to parade to, we will simply provide them the repetitive content, and they will walk like zombies in that direction. And people, even in something, there was a Netflix show called Queen's Gambit. It was a made for Netflix movie. The lady was a pill popping alcoholic chess player. You can look this up on Google too. When this movie about chess playing came out on Netflix, chess sales on Amazon went up, I think, 7,000 or 700%. And so we mimic, copy, emulate, and mirror the most repetitive content of our environment. It's not a malfunction. It's who we've survived as a species. And you can do great things with this. You can give positive repetitive content. You can uplift. You can infuse the audience with beauty and motivation and successful messages, but you can also use this mimicking pathway for various devious and nefarious modalities, and that's how it's being used today. It's being used to knock the public down, create this massive power differential, where the average person basically is like Pigpen from Charlie Brown with this big cloud of filth around them. They're thinking they'll have a hard life by happenstance or chance happening, but really they're mimicking what's on the TV, the Coronation Street, all these shows about people hanging down at the pub. I know I'm in the UK talking today. This is why people are basically running east looking for a sunset. They're rearranging the furniture on the deck of the Titanic in their own life daily. And it's because of these movies aren't what people think they are. They're not there to entertain. They're there to entrain. Your TV is a documented military weapon, can definitely be investigated as such. If someone went to see the documentary Pseudoology, The Art of Lying, this is a good documentary to start with. The TV was invented under military applications to control the repetitive content based on the secret society coveted information documented by the Medes thousands of years ago. And they didn't have a TV, I'm well aware, thousands of years ago in the ancient country of Media, but they would control the content through harvest celebrations in the town's square. The town crier would go around and sort of post certain printed material, would read certain printed material all at the same time, all around the boroughs and small towns and villages all at the same time, therefore controlling the conversation. So what we have today, we have the TV hanging in the living room. This is actually the town square. They actually, their original idea is, how do we hang the town square inside the house of the villager? The TV is the town square hanging on the wall, controlling the repetitive content. And this is the average person's aperture, finds it very difficult to open to this extent and see the TV as the primary military weapon. It's more dangerous than a cruise missile, more dangerous than a tank rolling down the road, because you would react to traditional warfare invasion of your area. And traditional warfare invasion of your area would always be to hurt you, remove you, and steal your wealth. Well, you can use a TV to make you hurt yourself. And I can use a TV to make you take yourself out, destroy yourself, destroy your kids. And then what if I could trick you to give up your wealth, like shut your economy down for 2 weeks and then extend it out for 6 months in that calendar year? And then I can come in and sort of steal your wealth. You're too sick. You're sort of in a motorized scooter because I tricked you to hurt yourself down at the clinic. And you can see this is the preferred method of warfare. It's called fifth generation warfare, where the repetitive content of your environment is manipulated, hijacking the subconscious mind pathway. They can make you do anything, and I mean absolutely anything.
With exactly that in mind, and your references to victims and in the historical context, what might be a transition to it being almost used for exclusively negative purposes. Do you attribute any one factor or group of factors to to that being the case? I mean, you've talked about the way, particularly with exercise, that it can be used positively. The imbalance between the negative and positive use of mind control, is it simply that there is greater opportunity now to effectively sort of subvert it? Or what do you put that down to?
I just think it took a while for this, the group that's sort of in play, in charge, it took a while for them to acquire the mass media. And we all have seen the films and the schematics of how five major media companies or five companies own most of the media in the G20 nations. And I think this was always their goal, to basically enact this massive ruling mechanism over the public, extract their wealth, extract their power. And it's very easy to do with this, you know, this very particular, these mind control tactics, Charles, they're not complicated. You have a man in your country by the name of Darren Brown, who could be one of the most entertaining mind control performers in the entire world. He had a made for Netflix special called The Push. I'm not too sure if you're aware of it. If anybody would like that Netflix special, it's very hard to find today, because if you were to watch it, if anybody were to watch it, you would know what happened from 2024. But Darren Brown set up a 70 actor scam. So there was one victim and there were 70 actors, and it was all using these very simple mind control tactics mastered in that old country of media. And it's called The Push, Charles, because the crescendo of this 2-hour experiment was to use the mind control tactics. A lot of the mind control tactics are based on group pressure. Again, the repetitive content is the group, right? The repetitive content of our environment does signify the group and what the group is doing. That's why group pressure is so paramount inside mind control experiments. So this Darren Brown made for Netflix special called The Push, it was a 2-hour sort of drama with 70 actors and only this one victim. But after 2 hours, the crescendo was the victim was on the roof of a 10-story building. All the actors were trying to get him through group pressure to do something. And what they were trying to get him to do, Charles, was, for whatever reason, you can investigate it yourself, there was an old man on the precipice with his feet hanging over the 10th story of that building, right on the edge. And the group pressure was to get the victim, who knew nothing about what he was got himself into, didn't know it was all actors, thought it was a real life situation, didn't know anything about the mind control being used, was to go push that old man to his death to relieve the group pressure, to bond with the group, to satisfy the group, and find personal safety in the group by doing what the group told him, and kill and murder another human by pushing them off the precipice of a 10-story building. If you go watch this made for Netflix special called The Push, you will see the 2-hour experiment was run 4 times. 3 out of the 4 people murdered the man live on video. It's absolutely horrific. This is the power of basic mind control techniques. And this is what's going on with the public right now. In 2020, what had happened was the same mind control tactics were weaponized against the public, where figuratively they pushed themselves, many pushed themselves off the 10-story building. And the reason mind control is used like this, Charles, is that in traditional warfare, if I invade, but I'm punished, if you catch me at the end of the war's over, the peace treaties are signed, you're going to come get me if I was in the wrong. And basically, there's going to be some repercussions. Now, if you hurt yourself, you destroy your own economy, you go bankrupt yourself, and you hurt yourself, you take yourself out, you take your grandma out, you take your grandpa out. Legally, you don't have a leg to stand on. There's no re legal repercussions. You cannot sue anybody because you were put under mind control to hurt yourself or destroy your economy or completely demolish your own country into its own footprint. There's no legal repercussions. This is another advantage of using mind control to conduct war, take over nations, and have the people literally curse or blast themselves off the planet, is because even when you find out that mind control was weaponized against you, if you go down to the local barrister, the lawyer, you will not have any legal repercussion, legal like remedies. There's no legal remedies for that person if you took your kid down to the clinic and hurt your kid or blasted your kid off the planet. I hope people are connecting the dots with all this. I'm trying to keep the language clean, but this is exactly what some of these advantages that are inside the legal system, if traditional this sort of covert fifth generation warfare is executed on the public as opposed to regular warfare.
I think people will be joining the dots absolutely as you speak. Now, you touched on with the Derren Brown experiment, you touched on the one person that didn't, in effect, comply or fall in with it, which I do want to come back to. But just before we do get into that part of it, which I think will be fascinating, just talk a bit about the sort of ancillary lifestyle components to all of this. Because I've heard you speak previously about particularly food and drink, sort of caffeine and alcohol, and the other lifestyle choices, or at least the parts of our lives that we've had suggested to us that make us more or indeed less susceptible to any of this.
This is where the average person, Charles, is going to have the hardest time. Because if this is true, and it is, it would mean the economy and the society, the stores on your streets are all there for reasons that have nothing to do with free markets. So, in the realm of mind control, the average person, everybody has the tendency to copy, mimic, emulate, and mirror the repetitive content of their environment. Saying that, you can upgrade or uplevel, upregulate how many people copy the repetitive content if you poison them. Pretty simple. If an animal is injured, they need the group more because they can't survive on their own. Poisoned animals are weak, Charles. Weak animals can't survive on their own. If you table that damaged or weakened animal that's poisoned, the opportunity to come into the herd and mimic what the herd is doing, they realize they're too weak to fend for themselves. They're more apt to comply to group pressure. This is why alcohol was sold to the masses in the same way I'm talking about repetitive content, repetitive content, and then it becomes normalized. Now, once a pattern has become normalized, you can actually take the blinders off that person, tell them the alcohol is unhealthy for them, and they still have a hard time getting out of the spell. This is why in 2020, anybody that had an opposing view wasn't censored, was actually shut down. They were totally cut off. Because it's very important when you're putting in the mind control that there's no sort of counter narrative. So all the repetition is in this one area. So this is why alcohol is normalized. This is why you can tell people how dangerous alcohol is. And what it really does is it weakens the person physically to the point where the human neurology makes this. Your human neurology has a lot of invisible systems that you're not involved with. Because, I mean, even if you got up in the morning, You're not going to have to relearn to walk every morning. There's things your body remembers for you. There's patterns your body remembers for you. Your heart's beating. You don't have to get involved. So basically, this alcohol is being normalized. Everybody is drinking it. They know it doesn't really give them any benefit. It weakens them. And again, one of the invisible mechanisms, your body is always invisibly making the determination. Are you strong or are you injured? Well, when you drink alcohol, the body's like, he's still up. She's still up. He's still going to work. He's still functioning. He's still able to, walk the baby into the park, but he's not, or she's not really that strong in regards to resisting the group pressure. So you're more apt to comply. All the bottle shops, and in Canada, it's even worse. We have the marijuana, the alcohol, and people are going to have the hardest time with this one, Charles. The caffeine and the marijuana have been proven conclusively not only to weaken like alcohol. So alcohol's in its own category, but marijuana is being legalized in Canada. And caffeine is in the exact same boat because it interferes with what's called hippocampal neurogenesis. That just means that's a fancy word for your hippocampus is there inside your neurological complex to assess danger and react logically to danger. Now, I've seen experiments where they've taken the hippocampus out of a cat. This was very telling for what this particular brain damage does. The cat was face to face with a pit bull, and they were separated by a very thick piece of clear plexiglass. And thank God it was there because that pit bull was picked for the experiment. It was especially aggressive, Charles. I didn't think the plexiglass was going to hold, even though it was 3 to 4 inches. That pit bull was trying to get to that cat. The cat on the other side of the plexiglass, it was protected. It had its hippocampus removed. It didn't move, Charles. It did not have a fear response. So there was imminent danger, could not respond to the imminent danger. Now, if that plexiglass was not there, that cat would have been torn limb from limb. I hope people understand what's why the coffee shops are on every corner, why the marijuana is, seeping into our society, legal in Canada, coast to coast. And I will also say that in British Columbia, Canada, heroin is now legal for the same reasons. Fentanyl is legal. And so is cocaine and any crack, crank, strawberry. I mean, all these drugs people don't even know they're legal in British Columbia. It's for the same reason. So caffeine and marijuana destroy the hippocampus, leaving the user unable to react to imminent danger. And allows the vampire to not only penetrate their household to get the fangs in the neck of the coffee drinker. And these coffee drinkers, they're the happiest people. They're the happiest people in the world because if you go down to, the office tower, they'll even serve people coffee in the office towers. And there's reasons for this. Caffeine just has a very particular effect on the brain. It makes basically the slavery feel groovy. It reduces people's ability to see danger and react to it. And it also makes people do boring tasks longer. I'm not too sure if you're aware, but if you're trying to organize a full world takeover, you would probably want the coffee shops on every corner in the world, destroying the hippocampal ability of the public to react to danger. And I'll tell you something else. In 1986, Starbucks was going to go bankrupt in Seattle, Washington, the state of Washington. And it only had 6 shops. And there was a man named Howard Schultz that was involved with Starbucks. And when it was going to go bankrupt, he knew the operations inside and out. He says, I want to buy it in the bankruptcy. I'm going to get a discount now. I'll own these six coffee shops. And he went to get a financier to help him buy it. And he went to the financier and told them this great financial opportunity. And the financier said, Howard, I really like you, but you don't have enough money to come in as my partner. I'm going to take your idea and I'm going to go make an offer. And so Howard Schultz was somewhere else telling this story, and someone overheard him because Howard was sulking. He's like, I just lost my dream. And someone said, hold on, what's your name? Let me go talk to a man. I think it might be able to help you out. So in Seattle, Howard Schultz went to a meeting with this very large man, about 6'4". He heard of the other man stealing Howard's dream, walked right into his office building, looked down at him and poked him in the chest. And you said, you know, this deal is over. I don't have to explain. You're not buying this. And he walked out and he bought it with Howard Schultz. Now, guess who that? Who was that man that had enough power to go in and poke another man in the chest to the point where that man stood down immediately? Who do you think that was?
I don't know, but I can imagine cold cups of coffee sitting in front of people at this particular moment waiting to be tipped down the sink as you tell us the answer.
It was William Gates Sr., and he was financed by his son, Bill Gates. Now, why would Bill Gates Jr. and William Gates Sr., who's now deceased, be so interested in a coffee shop with six shops, which now has 35,000 shops? Because as we can see, some families are very into ruling. And there's a book from ancient times about how to rule. And in that ancient book is caffeine and other psychoactive drugs. In 1610, the tea was brought into the royal colonies to basically, and this is where tea time comes from, keep the hippocampus low in the morning, have the break again at 1, reinfuse the caffeine at 1 o'clock, a tea time, have a little break, put some flour in there, some biscuits as well, which causes brain damage as well. And just keep everybody really subdued. And the Crusades, which were, organized in the British Isles, went into Arabia. Well, that's where they found coffee. They found the coffee in 1685, brought it back because they knew what the tea was really for, is the caffeine effect. Because, the ancient secret society's playbook about caffeine and effects on brain function. But after the Crusaders found the coffee, they read it back to the royal family and said, you think the tea is good for subduing the brain function. You got to see this stuff. We don't know what it is. They call it coffee every time. The warriors in this part of the world go out and fight. They take a couple cups of coffee. This stuff is insane. You got to work the coffee back into the Commonwealth now. And so what I'm trying to say is what you believe is a free market with all these coffee shops, all the bottle shops, all the weed shops in Canada, everything like this, all the toxins, any toxin will really do. But some of these toxins are very particular effect on the hippocampus. And if someone wants to know how dangerous it is to take the hippocampus offline, Dr. Michael Nels, who just wrote The Indoctrinated Brain, he basically dedicated, I think, his last three books to how dangerous it is to taking the hippocampus offline with various modalities. One is what was going down at the clinic also over the last 4 years, takes the hippocampus offline, how the needles under the skin affect the hippocampus is the full expose that's discussed in his new book called The Indoctrinated Brain. So whatever you get or information download you get from Dr. Michael Nels' book about the hippocampal destruction, please understand that coffee And marijuana, smoking marijuana, not ingesting it, smoking it, does the exact same. And this is all part of a very ancient playbook. They are not stumbling upon this information. It's not a chance happening. We have been surrounded by these ancient techniques, and these ancient techniques have been at the forefront of the architecture and even the companies that we're allowed to interact with.
Yeah, I think it's now going to be very clear to people that it's been going on in some form or other for an awfully long time. Now, let's move into slightly different territory. I'll start with attributing something to Mark Twain that he may or may not have said, but he said it was easier to fool people than to convince them that they'd been fooled. So I think the bit that I'd like to get to is how is it that people realize or come to realize that they have been subjected to mind control for nefarious purposes, and how do they begin that journey of getting out of it? And of course, you, as I said at the introduction, you're running what you describe as reprogramming courses to avoid self-sabotage. So if you can just sort of link those two things for us, please.
Well, if someone wants to do a little bit of a litmus test to see if they're under mind control, it just their life is supposed to get easier as we age because we're supposed to gain experiences so that we make more logical and rational decisions every year that passes. So we're supposed to have more money, not less. We're supposed to have more joy and happiness, not less. We're supposed to be better at our relationships, not worse. So if you want to know you're under this sort of negative barrage of mind control, your whole life will be on fire, or at least some facets of it. You live check to check, your relationships aren't going good, you're thrice divorced, you're gaining more weight every year. This is not the way accumulating knowledge is supposed to manifest in life. As you accumulate knowledge, you're supposed to manifest better and better results. So if you're not manifesting more money, you're not happier, you're not having better relationships, you're not closer with your partner, you're most likely a victim of the, if you're getting sick, I mean, if you're gaining more weight, you can't control anything in your life. And when you're under this sort of mind control, determination or willpower, you know how much that matters in someone's life, Charles? Almost zero. Because it's the programs that win out, not your willpower. And when people try to will themselves to lose weight, when they try to power through, determine, and get like really strict, and they go for 3 months to the gym, they lose 10 pounds, they put back on 15. This is because willpower will always lose against this 800-pound gorilla. That's the subconscious behavior. The 800-pound gorilla will manhandle you at any time, and it thinks it's doing its job. It's there to make you safe by blending in. It wants you to fit in. But if the tribe you're in is an alcoholic, overweight, stinking, thinking, itty-bitty, shitty committee tribe, well, the 800-pound gorilla doesn't care that that makes you miserable. It just says, that's the majority. That's where you're going. Resist if you want. I'm dragging you there. I have a safety protocol. I do not have a logic protocol. And that's where your behavior is going to go. The only way to get over this is to reprogram that 800-pound gorilla to drag you in the direction of your dreams. And the 800-pound gorilla only responds to the repetitive content of your environment. So if that's the case, guess what you are, that's what you're charged to do is control the repetitive content of your environment. I control mine every single day. I don't watch TV. I don't drink my brain function with alcohol, marijuana, or any other drugs, although I used to. I'm an overcoming self-sabotage coach. I used to be a master self-saboteur. I know what it's like to quit alcohol, quit cocaine, quit steroids, quit fast food. I know what it's like. It's very hard unless you control the repetitive content of your environment. So I control the repetitive content of my environment to signal the 800-pound gorilla and give it the environmental stimuli to trick it to believe it lives in a wealthy tribe, a healthy tribe, a motivated tribe, a spiritual tribe. And then the 800-pound gorilla does what it's designed to do. It says, Jason, I love you. I want to protect you. I'm getting this new repetitive patterning from the environment. We're in a new tribe. The tribe is wealthy. It's healthy. It's vibrant. It's knowledgeable. It's empowered. This is where we're going now. I'm just doing my job. And I say, thank you. I tricked you to drag me there. And the programming does the rest. So you have to hack your existing neurological pathways to change your life in the same way that the people who rule us, the misleaders, the architects of doom, they're doing the exact same. I mean, if you go watch Netflix today, like all you're seeing is actors shooting, stabbing, and killing each other. This has a very negative effect on where that gorilla is going to drag you. I hope that makes some sense. And I offer this reprogramming. If you, I give it for free. I give it for free slowly through my email system. And I do have paid programs. But if you don't want to do the paid programs, it doesn't matter. You'll get the same information over a longer period. You can just get on my email list. Email me at info@jchristoff.com. J is a single initial J, and Christoph is Christ with an OFF on the end.
I think what you've just said, Jason, will resonate enormously with the UK column audience, because a repetitive refrain is that you keep us sane. UK, you know, the news output, the content, exactly like what you've been saying, keeps people sane. And that is the you know, the 800-pound gorilla, exactly like you're talking about. But I think the other thing that people, I should imagine, might be thinking at this point is, what about those close or perhaps previously close relationships that we've all had with friends or family that have not taken that departure or that leap? How does one deal with those sorts of people, either in terms of just trying to maintain a relationship in a positive sense, or making people see that you haven't lost your mind and that in fact you've found a better place?
Well, that's very simple, Charles. This is called the hero's journey, or the rite of passage, where we are all designed to leave the security of the port and go sail our own ship, leave a boy, come back a man, leave a girl, come back a woman. And we do need this lonely time to make the hero's journey. No one's ever walked up Mount Everest or, you know, slaughtered a dragon with their family in tow. And that process is actually another thing that they used to do in ancient societies. It was called the rite of passage, this maturity ritual, where you are sent away from the family so that you can come back later as a contributing mature member of the tribal circle and rid yourself of childhood fantasies that you need these friends around you to survive or be your best. But in most cases, for you to be your best self, you have to leave the tribe behind, and you're probably still sporting a lot of immature group-based behaviors, like they're important. I left my family when I went to university, made a lot of mistakes, left a boy, came back a man, had conflict with my parents. Now when I enter the tribal circle, I come back with full respect. My parents listen to, they're listening to the UK column today. They're listening to all my talks. They respect me. So we're not putting enough weight, Charles, on the proper rite of passage. These used to be ceremonies in ancient tribes, because if you don't make them, if you don't mature or individuate, and it's been proven in psychology, you need pain, failure, and discomfort mature to an adult to individuate as an individual member of the tribe. We're not getting any of these ceremonies. The people who rule us, again, this is part of the book, the ruling book, Keep them as infants. Keep them comfortable. Put them in a comfort coma. This is another benefit of the alcohol and the coffee and the marijuana and the sugar and the takeout, is that, or the painkillers or the antidepressants, they're all painkillers. And you need pain to mature and individuate. You need pain to go from a child to an adult. So if you keep people in a comfort coma and litter the slave camp with sedative and tranquilizing compounds, not only do you get the brain damage that helps with mind control, you also get the individual of an adult age talking and thinking and acting like a child. And in the ruling book, it's easier to rule children, it's harder to rule adults. So you can see there's many secondary, tertiary benefits to making sure people think pain is a goblin when really it's a guardian. Someone today, oh, I'm depressed. I'm like, perfect, excellent, awesome. They're like, why? It's a malfunction. I'm bad. I'm defective. I'm depressed. I'm like, no, this is perfect. This is the pain you got to feel. You got to figure out what you're depressed about. Could be your job, your relationship, that you're getting destroyed by a tyrannical government. Listen to the pain teacher. Invite that pain teacher in. Don't slam the door. Don't sedate to it. Don't tell the pain teacher to go away. It's a guardian. It's not a goblin. There's nothing wrong with you. Everything's right with you. Go. The answer to the pain is inside the pain. Go through the pain. And you can see the structure of our society today, Charles. What is it? Pain's a defect. Pain's a goblin. Take a pill. Get rid of the pain. Slam the door on the pain teacher. Don't listen to the message. And by doing that, you stay a perpetual infant. It's called the infantilization of the society, is based on reframing pain as a goblin when really it's your only way out.
Very heartening advice. And it brings us right to the heart of what I think we absolutely have to discuss, which is the youth, the children, and where mind control starts with them in a negative capacity, and how you regard the influences on their lives. I mean, in particular, parenting, but of course, education is such a big one, and all of the rest of it. So could you just talk about, I mean, because again, I know you run youth programs, but particularly those early influences for children and how critical that their sort of start in life is.
Yeah, we were children once. We were put under this similar forms of mind control. Most people are under the same forms of mind control today. The kid, again, if you can get 3 out of 4 people on Darren Brown's made for Netflix special, The Push, to murder an old helpless man, wasn't a man too, by the way. He was harnessed. He was a stunt man, just wanted to put that in. When they did push him off, he was harnessed. He was a little scared. He said, getting pushed off all the time. But if you can make someone commit murder live on TV while getting filmed with only 2 hours of mind control application, picture the kids, picture yourself, picture what you've got conned into, picture what they're getting conned into. The sky's the limit. And we can see that the sky's the limit. We have the same mind control modalities, just basically setting up the safe zone. Like the bigger herd is the safe zone. So if you just tell the kids, hey, look, you can be safer if you become trans, what do you think the kid's brain is going to do? Because all we do is look for safety. And if it's been shown that a child's mind mimics 9 times greater than the adult mind, because the child is shorter and less physically capable of defending themselves from tribal attack. So when you're less physically capable of defending yourself from tribal attack, mimicking is all you got to be safe. So before you're mature, you get stronger muscles, before you go to the MMA gym or the karate gym, you're so vulnerable to this psychic manipulation. And the government is not the government. We all know that. But they're saying, hey, kids, you can be in the bigger group if if you wave this flag, if you're this gender, if you use these pronouns. And the kid's psyche is like, Jackpot, bingo. I love it. I feel so afraid. I really want to be in the bigger group. We were all afraid in school. This is also why they separate us from our parents. It makes us extremely afraid. It makes us vulnerable to this sort of programming. We're not supposed to leave our parents, Charles. We were never supposed to go to school. This idea of separating child from parent is only 250 years old. It was instituted by the same groups I'm talking about. We're already crapping the bed when we leave or when we separate from our parents. It's a horrific traumatic event. It's a form of trauma-based mind control where the child is just floating in outer space in school, looking for that mountain or rock to sort of bond to. Can I please be safe? I'm so afraid. And of course, the government knows that they have this free-floating anxiety, like Matthias Desmet talks about in The Psychology of Totalitarianism. You have a free-floating anxiety. And here comes the government school teacher saying, come on over here. This is where you're going to be safe now under this big rainbow flag. And that's not the only agenda going on. This is, they're saying, the repetitive content is you should be ashamed of your own skin color. The domestic skin color of the country you're in, you should be embarrassed to have this. And the reason they do that, Charles, is because weakness is not only physical. You can have psychological weakness. Shame and guilt have been proven to weaken the human to the lowest point on a spiritual level. So shame and guilt is used quite a bit in these tactics. Do this for someone's grandma, you feel ashamed just because of your skin color, even though it's the skin color native to your own country. These tactics are weaponized by the group in power. The group in power steals your money, pays it to our friends to mind control our kids and mind control our society. That we have a lot of work to do. But if we can see how the magician does the magic show fails to impress, and we're going to really have to line up here, adults up. We're going to have to power up and understand this battle will start in our own kitchens. The poison is there as the primary weapon. Tricking you to use your mouth as a garbage compactor is not a side hustle for these people. It is the primary weapon of the control. Use your mouth as a garbage compactor. Make you think that you're doing it yourself. So you're so weak and so disorganized and so disoriented that they manhandle you at will, either financially or spiritually or intellectually. This is the primary weapon. Going, I love the UK. I love the UK people. Go into your kitchens. Change the repetitive content of your environment. Know that you don't have to find Richie Sunak or whatever his name is. Go into your kitchen. It's you. You got to deal with you. Don't go take your messy carcass out there and try and do anything. Clean up your own country, the 2-foot by 2-foot country called you. Clean that country up and then work your way out, and you will find. That's the biggest change. They will be more afraid of you getting healthy than any torch and pitchfork protest you could ever organize. Your power is their ultimate fear.
I think that is a repetitive message that people really do need to hear and will take great solace from. Now, you and I, and I dare say a number of the listeners and viewers, had the privilege of growing up not being surrounded by all sorts of the technological advancements or so-called advancements that we see around us now, in particular, of course, the smartphone. What effect do you see that having and indeed sort of taking in the future for the younger generations now, and what, if anything, can be done about it?
This smartphone issue is a lot more sci-fi and movie-like than anybody has the capacity to deal with right now. There's stuff about the cell phones they are not telling the public. There are invisible waves coming out of your cell phone, interacting with your own natural energy fields. this group is very advanced and they're not telling us what these cell phones are really for. They're telling us that, we can play on our phone, we can be on social media. This is just the rat poison that's used again. Don't forget, 90% of rat poison is food. Only 10% is poison to do the job. So be very careful. All you need to do is start educating. You don't have to do too much because you naturally have the ability to speak like me. You naturally have the, we're all the same. You naturally have the ability to think like me. You just got to clear your system of all these poisons, and then you'll start understanding what's really going on here. The poisoning of your system keeps your system offline. Someone says, I hate the system. I said, good. But you can't fight the system when the system's inside of you. You can't fight the system when you eat the system, when you drink the system, when you smoke the system. You are the system. If you're putting it inside yourself, if you watch the system, you watch Netflix and you're watching all these negative images. I mean, the average 18-year-old, they say, sees 16,000 murders by the time they're that age. This has a major negative impact on the repetitive content that your gorilla is going to drag you toward. So don't worry too much about the cell phone. Know it's a danger. And then you just start reprogramming and putting these dangers further and farther to the periphery in your own life. It's about progress. It's not about perfection. You got to try and quit alcohol. You might get 2 days on the first day, on the first attempt. You might fall flat on your face. But the exercise of pushing yourself back up will make you stronger. The exercise of starting and stopping will make you stronger. This is the gym we got to work out at. We got to fall down. We got to experience the pain of failure to mature as fully fledged, empowered adults. Just understand that no one quits their addiction right away. When I quit alcohol, I didn't drink 15 martinis a night, but I did drink 15 martinis a couple nights a week. It took me 2 full years to quit alcohol, but I did it. And then I went a full decade. I didn't even take a sip of someone's drink, nothing, zero. And now I will take a sip because I balanced my body. I used to do a lot of cocaine, but in a very short amount of time. I quit that really fast because I got a big download that I was going to die if I did another bag. Just understand that it takes time to get your life together, but you start now and you understand, get mad because whether you're doing cocaine, steroids, alcohol, all these other drugs, wasting time watching TV, working a job you don't like, you're doing it because they programmed you to do it. This is not your natural state. Get pissed off enough to muster that initial push of energy to start reprogramming your environment and start bringing in positive, empowering, repetitive content to treat that gorilla. Sometimes the gorilla go back to the old program, but it's still not enough. It's not a good enough reason to hang it up and quit. Keep going and lead by example because we mimic and copy the most repetitive content of your environment. Lead for people in your environment. Be the person who stopped drinking. Be the person who stopped smoking and save your own community by your leadership, by your example.
Yes, I think that leads very well into something that I wanted to ask you about, which is, in effect, the sort of constant process of avoiding self-sabotage. And I'd love your own sort of personal reflections on how you feel about it. But in particular, I think something that people have noticed is how in effect, the bar was raised so high at the peak of fear about the supposed COVID pandemic. And I think there's been a significant percentage of people who since then have felt that the situation has calmed down to the point where they don't need to be sort of on their guard, perhaps in the way that they were. Is that something that you can ascribe a particular reason to, or indeed, relate it to what you're describing as being a constant process that you're going?
Basically, and there's a book that was written by Dr. Joost Merlou. Joost is spelled Joost, and Merlou is Meee, RLOO, and it's called The Rape of the Mind and Menticide, and you can find that free online. What we're seeing is a very well-known pattern in mind control is to attack and give a break, to attack and give a break, to attack and give a break. So right now we're in the break cycle. They never stop attacking. They really haven't stopped attacking as well. We're just in a little bit of a lull. But these attacks on our freedom, the Online Harms Act up in Ireland, you're going to go to jail if you offend someone online. You could be charged £75,000 or something like this. They're always attacking and putting us in this fear. If you're not working on your strength, what I call the five pillars of strength, the next time they attack, what resources are you going to have based on the next attack? Are you going to have the extra money in the bank so that you can leg out if they ask you to do something that might kill you, like take a jab? Are you going to be able to say, no, I quit my job? Do you have £100,000 in the bank? Well, you had 4 years now to save it up. You had 4 years to start a business. You had 4 years to not even maybe make extra money. You had 4 years to quit all your addictions and then invest some money. Maybe you can get £30,000 from that. Don't forget, Charles, I used to spend $35,000 a year on cocaine, steroids, and junk food and alcohol. And I stopped doing that 20 years ago. That's $700,000 in savings. And Charles, I have that $700,000, absolutely. So there's financial pillar of strength, there's physical pillar, your health, intellectual pillar, do you know what's going on? Emotional pillar of strength, can you stand strong in a storm emotionally, or do you get caught up in the drama of the day? And spiritual pillar of strength, do you know why you're here? Are you here to drink alcohol, give half of your income to an ancient criminal cabal, and then go get drunk down at the pub to make the whole situation feel groovy? Or is that why you're here? How's your spiritual pillar? I don't think that's why you're here. That's certainly why I'm not here. So, yes, we're in a little bit of a lull, but it's important to fortify yourself for the next attack so that they don't steal everything you own, everything you have, everything you've built up over time when the next attack comes. So the next attack will come because they know they've weakened us. They don't. A bully will never attack a strong person in the schoolyard, Charles. The bully will assess, I'm going to find the weakest link. And I'm going to go pick on that person. So if we can exude strength, if we can vibrate strength out, if we can be stronger versions of ourselves, the bully starts to second question themselves about it, if this attack is going to work or am I going to get punched in the face? And this power game can really work. Like in the NHS, they were going to jab mandate all the healthcare workers in the NHS, and I believe in the UK, they pushed back and then they pulled back the mandate. Our power, our pushback, our collective strength can move the needle. So it's a very important, the strength thing is the most important aspect of winning this battle that we can ever fold into our own lives. I hope that answered your question a little bit.
It absolutely does. And I think people will take enormous comfort and positivity from the amount of very constructive and sort of strengthening points that you've brought out. We're going to have to wrap up quite shortly, but and I ask the next question with a certain amount of trepidation. But given what you've said about the individual and effectively the power within the individual to sort yourself out, sort your life out, which I think has been a very coherent message in this interconnected world that we live in, if it's not too general a question, but how do you see things turning out? Do you think in the sense of it being a spiritual war or a series of spiritual battles, how do you envisage things turning out?
What I see is the pain teacher is going to come for all of us, and we're all going to mature whether we want to or not. And it depends when we're going to open the door for the pain teacher. Now, the pain teacher knocks louder and louder the more important the messages get. And everybody has their threshold of pain that they're going to react to. I do think it's going to get worse before it gets better. But this is what humanity needs to wake up. It's a little bit of a cycle, and you don't know who's really running the show spiritually at this point. Is it the man with the forked tail and the hooves, or is it God himself saying you need to awaken from your slumber? So I'm going to potentially, if it was God, I'm going to employ the evil forces to give you as much pain as you're going to need before you understand that going down to the football match with another man's name on your back and screaming in a drunken rage is not why I put you here. So I can see us getting a little bit worse. I can see the pain threshold being met. I can see pain doing what it's designed to do is mature and individuate each single person to the point where they're forced to take full control of their health and stop living out these illogical and irrational ideas like going to the voting booth and begging psychopaths to steal your money, rule you, and euthanize you. Living out that idea is probably not in your best interest. And the reason you have that idea in the first place is because although it's insane and although it's illogical and fatalistic, it's repetitive. And that's why you think this is, I'm going to vote out the red actor and put in the blue actor, and then I'm going to get back down to the pub and watch the football game. This kind of society can't sustain itself. So we have to leave the childhood fantasies behind. We are going to get there. There'll be a little bit more pain. That pain will awaken the next 20 or 30%, and the evil systems will collapse, and we'll build alternate systems and parallel systems that build us up with positive repetitive content and supportive repetitive content. It's just a cycle. We just got to ride it out. We're almost there.
Jason, that's a fine note to end on. Now, tell us, please, where can the audience be directed towards to find out more about what you do, the courses you run, and where on social media and whatnot that we can find you?
Well, I think it's always just best, Charles, to email me personally and get on my email list because, of course, I can't speak entirely uncensored unless I'm on my personal email content list. So email me again at info@jchristoff.com. Again, single initial J. Christoph is Christ with an OFF on the end. info@jchristoff.com. And I'll just slow drip you this information little bit at a time so you can process it. I'll give you encouraging words and insider information that you're not going to get anywhere else. So you can make your life better a little bit at a time. Again, it's about progress. It's not about perfection. Don't shame and guilt yourself when you fall down. That is the process. I fell down more times than I can count, but I got up that extra time and made my life better and better every single day to the point where I have my five pillars of strength in order right now, where before I didn't.
Excellent, thank you. Now, if you're not already supporting the UK column financially, but you think you are in a position to do so, then please do consider it because it will enable us to carry on producing interviews of such a high quality as this one with Jason. And as I said at the beginning, all notes and links will be posted with this interview at ukcolumn.org. So it simply remains for me to thank Jason very, very much indeed for what has been an absolutely fascinating voyage over the last hour or so. Jason, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed, and we will keep in touch.
Thank you, Charles. It was an honor speaking to your beautiful audience. Thanks for having me on.